This is the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
My old bed, my old pillow, my old bathrobe, my old friends, my old books faded and yellowed. It's good to be back home again. My old yard needs to be mown. While I was gone, it must have rained. Month away now, overgrown. Oh, it's good to be back home again. Open windows, let the air in. Open wide the back door screen. The one I put that taped up tear in. It's good to be back home again. Slippers I love the most to cradle my poor feet within. Floorboards creaking where they're supposed to. It's good to be back home again. Open windows, let the air in. Open wide the back door screen. When I put that taped up tear in, it's good to be back home again. So now I lay me down to sleep and dream of where I have just been. Tomorrow's worries they will keep. It's good to be back home again. It's good to be back home again.
Chuck Hall in our studio here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. It's good to be back home again. Is this like being at home for you, being in a radio studio, Chuck Hall?
Boy, it sure is. I grew up in radio stations. Dad was a broadcaster, and I came on to it a little later in my life. So yeah, it feels fine. Although I have to say, you have a board that's a lot more advanced than the one that I had.
Right. They used to dial up.
That's the kind that I remember.
Sure.
Seriously old school when,
sure.
when it comes to that.
Well, we welcome you to the Folk Show. I had the pleasure of seeing Chuck at a performance a few weeks ago at the Round Room in Mount Vernon, and I was just so taken with his smooth tone and his great songwriting, and I just had to ask him after his performance if he could come and see us here at the Folk Show, and he said he would, and I'm so pleased that he said yes. So thank you.
I'm so pleased that you asked. I'm so pleased that you asked. I mean, I said yes so fast that it would make your head spin.
No. Well, you know, we one of the songs that you wrote has been requested so many times here at the Folk Show. And you've got some fans that really enjoy listening to the song Angels.
Oh, yes.
And I heard you do that in performance the other night. I'm like, oh, my goodness. You've written quite a few songs. And this couple of releases here down at the Old Canal and the album The Northern Sagas are full of Chuck Hall tunes.
They are indeed. They're very different records, but I'm very proud of both of them. The Northern Sagas sort of recounts some of my adventures in Atlantic Canada and Cape Breton and Newfoundland. Down at the Old Canal is sort of about my love for home. I grew up on the almost in the Cape Cod Canal, and there are some songs that are on both of them that made it there just because I had never recorded them. And Angels is a prime example. It's on the Northern Sagas. It doesn't have anything really to do with that theme, but the song has really gotten around over the years. And I thought maybe I ought to just record this one day, and so I did. It's to this day it's the only time that I've ever played it accompanied by banjo. But I loved it. I loved the way that it came out, and it's funny how songs like that have sort of followed me. Some of the songs are a lot less obscure than I am, and I guard my obscurity jealously. So I've worked to achieve it. But it is nice to have a song like that. Every 6 months or so, somebody will tell me that they heard it or they knew it or they knew it long ago, and now they're singing it to their children and such. All of which is very flattering. I mean, none of us who are doing this are doing it for the money. There's not enough money in it to do it for the money. But for something like that to come along, that's a songwriter's pay. That's the currency that we really treasure. And so I'm very, very grateful that the number of people have responded to that song over the years.
Susie Burke recorded it. Anybody else record it that you know of?
Rick Lee recorded it.
Oh, okay.
The late Rick Lee, mm-hmm. My great friend. There's a couple of times it's been recorded on the West Coast. I did have one encounter with it that was really special. I got an email encounter from somebody who said, "This song is very important between me. It's between me and my son." And I thought, well, that's an interesting. That interests me. And so he said, "What I'd really like to do is to record the song." I said, "Well, okay, we can talk about that. If that's something you'd like to do, we can talk about that." "Well, I want to change some words." "Okay, I'm not, I'm not going to be a killjoy about this. If this is something you really want to do, and it's that important, then I'm not possessive about it as far as that goes." And then if I could, I want to copyright it. And that's where I drew the line. That's where I finally said no, you can copyright it as a derivative work or something like that, which people do. But I can't give you permission to steal the song, to steal my song. By all means, sing it. By all means, sing it and play it. But that was a bridge too far. So, did you want me to play that song?
Sure.
All right. I'd love to do that. This is because of the New Hampshire connection to this song. Lots of people know it, but I'm not sure that they would know this part of it. This song was a birthday present to a young woman who was going off. Was going off to college. Now, I had known her since she was in diapers. I'd watched her grow up, and her family had split apart and stuff. And I had managed to stay in touch with everybody in the family. It was amicable as those partings can be. And it was evident that the pressures of life were beginning to kind of boil for her. And I just wanted to put in a good word for the magic of life and for the unanswered questions that open the doors to all sorts of possibilities. This was a young woman in Milford. She, the last I knew, was living and raising a family outside Montreal. So good for her. Good for her, I say. So this is Angels. How many angels dance on the head of a pin? Can God make a mountain so high he can't move it again? How long is a moment? Where do we come from and where do we go when it ends? How many angels dance on the head of a pin? I remember it clearly when you were just 5 years old.
proud of the teeth you were missing when you smiled at shows. And now you're a woman, and suddenly finding the world drives your joy away. Remember the songs Dad and Mom used to sing when I'd visit your house and we'd say, how many angels dance on the head of a pin? Can God make a mountain so high he can't move it again? How long is a moment? Where do we come from and where do we go when it ends? How many angels dance on the head of a pin? Now you say you get dizzy the way that your world goes around. Between business and lovers, you can't find the time to slow down. That life in the city is taking its toll. You measure despair by the glass. You found the answers you wanted to know, and I've got a question to ask. How many angels dance on the head of a pin? God make a mountain so high he can't move it again. How long is a moment? Where do we come from and where do we go when it ends? How many angels dance on the head of a pin? I wish I could explain why there's so much pain in the world. Don't you know even the hardest of stones turn into beautiful pearls? And some of the best of your questions aren't meant to be answered, but to give you the grace to discover the wonder you had as a child and the world was a playground place. How many angels dance on the head of a pin? Can God make a mountain so high he can't move it again? How long is a moment? Where do we come from and where do we go when it ends? How many angels dance on the head of a pin? How many angels dance on the head of a pin?
That's Chuck Hull from the album The Northern Sagas, Angels, performed live in our studio on The Folk Show here at NHPR.
On the next Morning Edition, one of the fastest growing states in the U.S. is not investing in the census. And some lawmakers say politics is to blame.
I think Republicans are fearful that a more accurate count disadvantages their party.
Could that decision backfire on Texas? Plus,
and the Oscar goes to.
Who won? Who lost? We'll recap the Academy Awards on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition weekdays from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Rick Ganley, right here at New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and DSP Shows, presenting the Waylon Jennies, the female trio of vocalists known for their folk and bluegrass harmonizing, April 8th at the Music Hall in Portsmouth. Tickets at themusichall.org. And Morno Law, located in Nashua, focusing on family law, estate planning, probate matters, and more, helping good people through tough times. Learn more at MornoLaw.com. Chuck Hull is our guest here in the studio at New Hampshire Public Radio at The Folk Show. Chuck has a New Hampshire connection. Not only did he record a tune that was recorded by Susie Burke, who's actually, I think, lives in Maine. She's actually in Maine, but Chuck also studied music in New Hampshire, right?
That's right. I did. And let me say this about Susie. Susie and David live in the town that my father grew up in South Berwick.
Wow, that's neat.
In Maine. Yeah, I forgot where I was,
it's all
I was
right.
going. We were talking about
the Keene connection.
About the Keene connection.
Right. New Hampshire.
Yeah, and the family moved here in 1968 and from western New York. I grew up on Cape Cod. We followed my father's radio career out to western New York. And long story short, Dad got a job in Washington D.C. as a kind of a congressional liaison for a congressman, and Mom decided we are not moving to Washington D.C. And I was not privy to any of those discussions, but they ended up with Dad taking a job at what was then Sanders Associates in Nashua, and so we moved back. We moved back here. We did not, in fact, go to D.C. Spent one really, really hot summer in Washington. I remember that in D.C. But we came back here in 1968. After a number of years, I was living in I'd actually taken an apartment in Temple, up on Temple Mountain, in one of the little cabins there. And a friend of mine had started taking lessons with somebody in Milford who was actually a student of Guy Van Duzer. And I heard him play once, and I've been playing and singing and sort of dabbling in songwriting and stuff for 7 or 8 years maybe, and I figured that I had probably taught myself as much as I could, so maybe some lessons wouldn't be a bad thing. It would not be a blow to my pride to actually seek out someone who was way better than I was, and so I did. And he sort of directed me to the classical program at Keene State College, what was then Keene State College. And I mean, I left my job, and which was just economically the wrong thing to do. But I left that behind to go study classical guitar I wanted to follow it up. It wound up being a year that I studied classical guitar, and what a great experience that was. I mean, not only the angst of never having any money. This is great training for a life in music. Not only did I not ever have any money, but long hours of practicing by myself, practicing technique. The greatest thing that studying classical guitar did for me was that it opened up my hearing, and all of a sudden I could hear music very, very differently. And now I would hear classical music very differently than I did before. And it suddenly became very interesting and very complex to me, and it certainly improved my songwriting like 1,000% all at once. All that discipline, all that work, and all that listening, because the greatest thing about I find that the most important thing about for songwriters is how well they listen. It's not how well we speak. It's not how well we sing. It's how well we listen. And I can almost always tell, at least in you know, we all have our favorites, but I can almost always tell a songwriter who has done a lot of reading, just because there's something that in their writing that tells me that they've encountered a great piece of literature, or that they encounter literature regularly, and they do that, and that they've studied it, you know. So all that sort of happened at Keene. What it gave me was just sensational.
It gave you discipline, didn't it?
It gave me discipline, and it taught me how little I really knew, because we get infatuated with, you know, either the latest song or the latest discovery, and you know, as long as we understand that we're just. We're afloat on a great big ocean, and it's all wonderful. And so that's how I approach all of music now. My wife Mary and I, who go off to classical concerts on a regular basis at Symphony Hall and stuff, and it just opens up my hearing. And then I come back to my favorite songwriters, and I hear things there.
Mm-hmm.
I hear things
it,
there.
It like cleanses your palate.
Oh, it does. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Chuck Hall is our guest here in the studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. How about another tune? Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about how folk music has come around for Chuck Hall.
Okay. This is a song called The Dollmaker's Secret. And I'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Got to wash these windows, got to sweep these floors. You can't tell between the lettering and the shadow anymore. The sunshine fights its way through dust and old-time letter spells. Dollmaker on the wall, past all the dolls upon the shelves. But the children in the town, they know I give them licorice while they take a look around. And young girls like the dresses women don't wear anymore. And the little boys like soldier dolls dressed from the Civil War. And the red-haired girl in freckles, pigtails, and chocolate on her face wants to know why all the girl dolls' eyes and noses are the same. So I scratch my beard and smile and lick my pipe, then reply, it's a dollmaker's secret. There was a little girl in a world of long ago who wore her mother's clothes up in the attic in the cold and played with all her baby dolls in the mirror that she had. And I see her face in antique photographs beside my dad. Now I've always been a loner and I've never had a wife. And these dolls have been my family and have been all my life. My eyes and nose look just like hers. The dolls look just like mine. It's a dollmaker's secret. Fades away and springtime comes to life once more. And another generation comes to see what I have got, not knowing I love ever more the dolls they never bought. It's a dollmaker's secret. It's a dollmaker's secret.
Chuck Hall here in our studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. Hey, you didn't record that one yet?
Oh, I recorded that. That was a long time ago. That was on a record called One. That was on a record called One Night in a Cheap Hotel. Okay,
oh,
now let me explain that.
You should explain that.
Okay, because I don't know what I was thinking. Well, I do know what I was thinking.
It wasn't the no-tell motel.
No, okay. No, it wasn't. But it was what it was a tip of the cap to T.S. Eliot, and a line that he wrote in the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. And so I had in mind this collection of people who might turn up at one of these odd hotels. This intersection of humanity that included the woman who was in the story of the Cat Lady's Dance, and this guy that made dolls, guy that was later a fellow that was fired from a machine shop, which is something I had some experience with. I don't really want to talk a lot about that, but So that was the picture that I had, and for that record. That was my first record, and I had to get the Dollmaker's Secret on that, and that actually is it. I have CDs of that, and it's way easy to download. But the best part of that is the dulcimer part that Lorraine Lee did on that when we recorded it. It's beautiful. It's a really wonderful work of art. Her dulcimer part just by itself. But that song really, really, really went ahead of me, and I wasn't especially prepared for it when it did. That song is particularly connected to Jack Hardy, at least for me, because not many. I mean, Jack was such a great songwriter, and such an imposing character. For a songwriter to have someone like that play and record one of your songs is a certifiable big deal. Okay, again, all of that plus $5 at Starbucks would get me a cup of coffee, but it's something I treasure. And let me tell you the story. This is I'm sitting at home one night and just sort of getting out in the folk music world in the 1980s. And one night I get a phone call, and you know, Jack had a very distinctive voice, speaking voice and singing voice. And So I pick up the phone, and I knew him by reputation. I knew him for the Tinker's Coin, and lots of people were playing, were covering the Tinker's Coin. And but I get this call, and this is Jack Hardy from the Fast Folk Musical Magazine, and as I like to tell people, Jack was one of those rare creatures who could pronounce the L in folk. he could do this. And we're a collective, and we're collecting songs of Boston songwriters. And somebody told me you had a song about a guy that made dolls. And I said, "Yeah, I do. I do, in fact." And so he told, you know, we're getting together at the what was then the Nameless Coffee House. It's called the Nameless Coffee House in Harvard Square. And you know, a few months later, everybody descended on this place, and Jack came in like royalty. I mean, he just did. He had that presence. He came in like royalty, along with some of the other people who were involved with the Fast Folk Musical Magazine. It was Christine Lavin and Sean Colvin and John Gorka and lots of other, Rod McDonald. I don't remember if Rod was at this one or not. So I recorded the song, and when this Boston area Fast Folk Musical Magazine record came out, it was unavoidable. It was side one, cut one. It was the first thing anybody heard from this thing. Went in there, and there it was. And I thought, well, you know, that by itself was quite wonderful as far as I was concerned. But about a year later, they all came back, and they said, Jack said, and by this time I had sort of struck up a sort of friendship with Jack, And he said, "We're going to do this concert where a bunch of us from New York. The first half of the show, we're going to cover Boston area songwriters' songs, and I want to cover the Dollmaker's Secret." Well, I knocked me over with a feather. Well, wow, what a great moment that was, I'll spare you the details about how the concert was reviewed. It wasn't reviewed especially well, and that song wasn't reviewed especially well. But I used to tease him about how poorly it was reviewed, and he would just say, "Well, they loved it in New York. What can I say?" right after he passed away, I was in touch with the Smithsonian Folkways, who had acquired all the Fast Folk library. And I said, "Listen, there's something funny here, because I was looking up one of Jack's songs, and because I had never learned the Tinker's Coin. Of all the songs never to learn, I had never learned the Tinker's Coin. So now I was going to learn the Tinker's Coin. And lo and behold, when I found a copy of it, it said the Tinker's Coin, but I recognized immediately this was the Dollmaker's Secret. So they had mislabeled this, but it's labeled correct. It's labeled correctly now, so you can hear Jack's version of of the Dollmaker's Secret on one of the Fast Folk. I think it's one of the bottom line shows that they did. I treasure his memory. I treasure his humor. I miss him. I miss him a lot. I miss his acerbic wit and his irascible ways. I miss all of it. I miss Jack.
Did you have a favorite Jack Hardy tune?
I do. Would you like me to play a favorite Jack Hardy
song? Sure.
I'll do one. I hadn't planned on this, but you know, let's do this. I'm going to guess that this is not everybody's favorite Jack Hardy song, but it's my favorite Jack Hardy song, and it might have been first one of his songs that I heard. Oh, Jack, forgive me. All that is open is the window. I hold out my hand to the rain. Tracks are glistening in shadow. The ties, the steel, and the train. Stare in the cold at the station. Though it really isn't you at all, the snare of infatuation on the desperate ledge of a fall. Take the night train to Paris, hoping to escape all the rules. Take the night train to Paris, you hopelessly romantic fool. Oftentimes love is a pageant of kings and queens and pawns. More often love, it seems stagnant, the subject of tedious yawns. The theater, the alleys of vision, the characters all waiting to strike. Collectors of garbage and wisdom, who catalog all that is not right. Take the night train to Paris, hoping to escape all the rules. Take the night train to Paris, you hopelessly romantic fool. I waited for the cafe to open, watch pigeons peck in the rain, that endless rain of confusion. The cat in my lap did the same. Oh, I hated to disturb her slumber, sleeping so peacefully through the night. The unfinished letter lay crumpled. The unfinished heart has its price. Take the night train to Paris, hoping to escape all the rules. Take the night train to Paris, you hopelessly romantic.
It's Chuck Hall doing a Jack Hardy tune called Night Train to Paris. Jack Hardy recorded that on his Cauldron album. Yeah. And Chuck Hall performed it for us here on The Folk Show. Such a treat to have Chuck. We're going to talk a little bit more with him in just a moment. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Franklin Pierce University, now accepting applications for the term starting March 2nd. Information and applications at franklinpierce.edu. And Seacoast Dermatology, treating skin cancers and skin aging issues specific to women, serving women in New Hampshire, Maine, and Mass. SeacoastDermNH.com. Chuck Hall has several albums. Two of them are Down at the Old Canal and The Northern Sagas. He's been busy doing some other things, too. So what have you been up to in the last few years, Mr. Hall?
In 2006, I won a songwriting contest. I entered very few songwriting contests, partly because I don't know whether it frightens me more to win or to lose those. But somehow having done a couple of them, the idea of songwriting as a competitive art just does not appeal to me, and it just kind of takes some of the spirit away from it to me. But other people are very fond of it and do it to great effect, and so I don't judge them at all.
It's you just, don't want to be a contender.
I don't. No, no. I'm a little long in the tooth for that. But
what did you win for?
I won for a song called Winter, and which is on one of those.
It's on the Old Canal album.
The Old Canal album, and one that has not yet been recorded, but that I will record. I am not ashamed of you. The song called I'm not ashamed of mm-hmm. you. It's a song about fathers and sons.
Good for you. Where was this? Was this in the Gloucester area?
Or? No, this was at the Rose Garden. Mary's telling me, it was a great thrill to win that. But just as that was happening, my inner life was headed in a different direction, and it was time not to put this away. And I never did put this away. I never stopped writing songs. But there is there's a proper order for these things. And I have found that songwriting and my musical life, is a wonderful servant. It's a wonderful servant, but it's a lousy master.
Right.
You
sure.
know?
Yeah.
So, at that point I was going through a lot of sort of theological changes and stuff. Shortly after that, after winning that, I've been on this road for a long time, and I finally said, well, I guess I've got to be honest about this and follow this up. So shortly after that, I became a Roman Catholic, and I'd been in the evangelical world for a very long time, and I became a Roman Catholic. And shortly after that, just out of the blue, and most unexpectedly, doors began to open to serve as a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church, which is just a great honor, and it's other than my marriage, it is the greatest joy of my life. But completely unexpected. This was not on my menu. I can guarantee you, this was not on my menu. But it happened, and. Then I found it because that required 4 years of study, and which I did. And then I've spent the last 5 years serving a couple of parishes in Peabody. I now serve two parishes in Amesbury and Salisbury. And sort of coming around again because my musical life never went away. Now it comes in, but it comes back to me as a wonderful servant. And I'm just finding such joy in it. Frankly, when I was younger, I was chasing what every songwriter chases. I don't do any chasing anymore. Right. And it just the act of doing this, the act of writing a song, the act of recording some human experience in that way, is that's of prime importance to me. So all of that to say that nowadays when somebody comes along and says, I remember this song, or I heard this song, or this one. The song that I started off with here, It's Good to Be Back Home Again, I wrote after coming back from a trip to Ireland last year. And it's like that one had to come out before the others that I wanted to write would come out. And I played that the other night at a little I featured at an open mic in Maine. And somebody said, I just moved back home from the South. And she said, I was in tears listening to that song. That just meant so much to me. Mm-hmm. And, that's the currency that we deal with. That's the currency that I deal in. And that makes me feel like, okay, this is the reason I do this. This is what, I mean, I do it for self-fulfillment. But that other dimension, when I see this as servant, because being the diakonia is a word that means servant. And so all of this serves, mm-hmm. is designed to serve. And so all that means a great deal to me. So I disappeared. I won the songwriters contest and then disappeared into all of these studies. And now I'm sort of, it's being handed back to me as a gift, mm-hmm. I think. And I'm just in love with it.
I was just having this conversation with Harvey Reed last night. We were both at the Tom Rush show over in Portsmouth, and we were just talking about the gift of having someone let you know that they were touched in some way by a song. You've had that experience in other ways, haven't you, where songs just kind of come back to you?
More than many songwriters, and probably less deserving than other songwriters, but every time it does, it's a great thing. Not long ago, and I'll share this as an introduction. In 2001, Mary and I went to made our first trip to Atlantic Canada, which is something that we've tried to do every year since. We haven't made it every year, but almost every year, to Cape Breton and Newfoundland. And at the time, the movie The Titanic was huge, and so sort of at the end of the journey, we stopped off in Halifax and visited a couple of the cemeteries where the victims of the Titanic were buried, and stopped off at the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic. That had a lot of artifacts and a special Titanic. Well, as always seems to happen to me, the upstairs with all the glitz with the Titanic and all that stuff, yeah, that was cool. But what was really cool was downstairs in this museum, where it talked about something called the Halifax explosion, and I had no idea what this was. I had no idea what this was about. My mother was very much aware of history. My grandparents, nobody ever talked about this that I remember. Nobody ever mentioned this. But as I began to know the history of that was involved with it, with the Halifax disaster, the bigger the story got, the more it touched me. And so I wanted to record that. I wanted to put that in a song of some way. And Kate, I'll tell you, I tried and tried and tried and couldn't come up with a song that was less than half an hour long. And oh man, and just to find some way to find the, because part of the trick of writing songs is always the point of view. So I had to try. How do I find a point of view to tell the story of this song? And I finally did. Tumble onto a point of view. I stole a traditional Newfoundland tune to put the story together of the Halifax disaster from the point of view of someone who was very young when it happened, but went there to minister to the people and is now remembering that as the Boston Christmas tree was being lit. The Boston Christmas tree is something that we get from the citizens of Nova Scotia in remembrance for reaching out to them at the in the Halifax disaster. So it kind of tied that together. And I got I received a very interesting email from somebody who said, I found your song and I heard it and it was really touched. My grandparents were married in Halifax Harbor and were honeymooning in Montreal when the explosion took place. And so I'm doing this kind of wrap up of the family video, a family history video, and I wanted to include your song in the video. And I just thought, I mean, that's the currency we deal. That's the currency I deal in. That's it. I'm as subject to financial pressures as anybody else. But you can't pay for something
right,
like that.
Sure.
That's such a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing that someone would find the song, and then reach out to let you know that it had spoken to them, and then gone ahead and used this. It's beyond flattery. It is flattering, but it's something beyond that, because you realize that there's the service element. There's the service element of what I do. That has gone out and it has served somebody, and that makes it wonderful to me.
Let's play the song from Chuck Hull and the album The Northern Sagas. It's called Halifax here at NHPR.
My grandfather received the news at 12 o'clock that day. He closed his doctor's office and sent everyone away. He rushed straight home and gathered all the clothing he could pack and took me with him on the train that went to Halifax. We were among the 100 souls to crowd into the car. I was the only child allowed seated at the bar. We waited for the blankets to be loaded in the back, still unprepared for what we'd see when we reached Halifax. I asked my granddad doctor why it was he was so sad. He turned his face away from mine and said, "You'll understand." I pieced the truth together as I overheard the facts. There was a great disaster had befallen Halifax. The year was 1917, in the First Great War. Two ships collided in the Narrows and drifted into shore. With thousands drawn to see this thing, they blew up with such might. Near half the city was destroyed in a fireball of light. Hundreds then were blinded by glass and by debris. The tidal wave, it swept away some who died instantly. That night the heavens tried to hide the horror of this show, as the city smoldered underneath a brand new foot of snow. When we arrived in Halifax, a cloud hung in the air. The oil, the fire, the flesh, the flood, the stench was everywhere. Grandfather took me to a church where the wounded lay, said, "God has given us a work in Halifax today." And I still recall the children, now they were orphans who were without homes and parents, and so close to Christmas too. After 7 days we packed our bags and turned and headed home, as relief poured into Halifax from Boston and beyond. Now the many years that have since passed have not dimmed memory, The horror of that awful scene is still so fresh to me. But the people of the Commonwealth asked for nothing back. They went north to help rebuild the port of Halifax. Now each year when Christmas comes, it all comes back to me. They set the Nova Scotia spruce for everyone to see. My daughter's daughter sits upon my shoulders and she claps. When Boston's Christmas tree is lit, a gift from Halifax. Then joyful voices carry out our carols to the skies. Thousands gather every year, but most can't tell you why. So many can't remember what so many can't forget. And the Halifax disaster is commemorated yet. Halifax disaster, we will not forget.
This is the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio, and you just heard one from Chuck Hall. It was called Halifax from the album The Northern Sagas. If you want to keep up with what Chuck Hall is doing, and I know that you're as pleased as I am that he stopped by the Folk Show tonight, you can visit his website. It's hallfolk.com, and you can also find him on Facebook.
Yeah, you can find me there. You can find me on all the usual places.
We were talking before about your guitar study. Maybe you could play an instrumental to take us out of the Folk Show?
Oh, sure. This is, I'll take this out. This is a little instrumental piece that I wrote called St. Simon's that I began to compose on the south beach of St. Simon's Island in Georgia while waiting for my friend Tony Baker to come home from something. I had nothing to do, and I just traveled from Norfolk to go see him, and I couldn't really justify breaking into his house, so I thought I'd wait for him to come get me. And this little bit came out. This is called St. Simon's.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for asking me, Kate. This has been a delight.
Please come back.